You can say that again. Okay. So, Craig, do you want to take your role and get going?
Sure. Sure. Okay. I can read who I already know is on the call. Maybe if I get anything wrong that, you know, you can tell me, and then we can just see who else isn't mentioned yet. I've got Robin Horden so far, Ken Freeland, Vincent Gillespie, Ned Delaney, Craig McKee, Jeffrey, is that Jeffrey Orling?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
And James Hufford. So that's those are the names I was able to write down. So who
is that, Ned Delaney or Mike Delaney? Is that Mike Delaney?
No, it's Ned.
Okay. Ned. Okay. Okay.
Also, Dwayne Dietz.
Dwayne,
hey, welcome back.
And Paul
Zaremka. Okay.
Yes.
Steve okay. Dayock, did you make it back on the call, Steve?
Yeah, Steve Dayock's here.
Okay, Steve Dayock is here also. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Who else is there that has not been mentioned?
Sandra
Heatherhead.
Ingrid Castle.
I'm sorry, who?
Sorry, I couldn't use that last name.
Ingrid Castle, I-N-G-R-I-C-A-S-S-E-L.
You better do that one more time, a little bit slower.
Ingrid without a D.
Ingrid. I-N-G-R-I?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, and the last name?
C-A-S-S-E-L.
Okay. Great.
And which group are you with, Ingrid?
Idaho.
Idaho, thank you.
Yeah, Idaho Visibility Project.
Oh, okay. And who else do we have on the roster yet?
Mike Marino.
Mike Marino, right?
Mike Marino, okay. Are you with a particular group, Mike?
Architects and engineers, primarily.
Okay. You see, I usually note that down in the minutes, so who's with which groups, that's why I asked.
Sure.
Okay, anybody else that Craig hasn't called yet on the call that we need to note? Okay, Craig, you want to run through the list one more time of who you have and make sure that we got everybody, then we'll get started right away.
Sure. Robin Horden, Ken Freeland, Vincent Gillespie, Ned Delaney, Paul Zaremka, Ingrid Cassell, Craig McKee, Jeffrey Orling, James Hufford, Dwayne Dietz, Steve Dayock, Mike Marino.
I think Czak. No, I think you misheard Czak. Czak was supposed to be Sander Hicks.
Oh, Sander is
yeah.
There.
Oh, I thought it was Steve Dayock. I thought the Steve Dayock
yeah,
was Steve what I thought
Dayock. I heard. Steve Dayock is here. Steve Dayock is here. But
oh, Sander, okay.
Hicks,
so Sander Hicks as well.
Right.
Okay.
So how many names is that all together, Craig?
That's, let's see here, that's 13.
Good. Okay, we're ready to go then. All right. Well, let's go to our next point, which is always approving the agenda from the previous teleconference, which were circulated. Any need to amend the minutes before we approve them? Hearing no request for the amendment, then the minutes from the previous meeting are approved. And now we'll go on to review the draft agenda that was circulated. Does anybody have an amendment for the draft agenda? Anybody have anything they want to add?
Dwayne.
Or Dwayne?
Well, Dwayne, I'm just wondering, Don Meserlein is not on the call, is that right?
Meserlein.
He is here?
Don Meserlein, are you here?
Well, then, the items at the bottom of the agenda that pertain to his items, I would say, shouldn't be on the agenda.
Well, if he doesn't show up, they won't be.
Okay.
They'll be removed, yeah. But we have to give him the benefit of the doubt. If he shows up late, they'll still be there.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Anybody else want to make an amendment to the agenda? Hearing none, I'd like to make a request. We received a forwarded request from Phil Restino of Central Florida Veterans for Peace. A great film that they have produced, the intermediate down there produced, of them visiting the fire houses and distributing copies of Experts Speak Out. And I would like to request that his letter and the link be included in our minutes. Are there any objections to that? Hearing no objections, then we'll include his letter and with the link in our minutes. Are there any other amendments to the agenda? Hearing none, then let's proceed. We have a very packed agenda tonight and two special guests. And I guess the first one we had listed here is, unfortunately, I got his first name wrong in the print here, but his real first name is Vincent. It's Vincent Gillespie of the Ellen Mariani Legal Defense Fund. He's going to give us an introduction, an explanation of the her cause, and then he'll take questions and answers after that. Go ahead, Vincent.
Okay. Sorry, just before we start, we had somebody join the call there, and I didn't get them the
okay.
We'll
just join the call, please.
Hi, it's Keith Dudney calling.
Who?
Keith Dudney calling from Physics 911.
I didn't get the name. Did you get it, Craig?
No.
Keith Dudney.
Okay.
K-double-E.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, yes. Sorry.
That was clear. D-R-E-N-E-Y. Okay.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Okay.
I'm just going to listen and not contribute to the complication.
Okay. So, Vincent. Yes. Shall I go ahead?
Okay, it's your show right now. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, let's see where to begin. All the cases, all the lawsuits involving 9/11 for people. Now, there's various kinds of lawsuits. So the first responders have one type, but all the people who lost a loved one on 9/11 and who then sued for wrongful death cases, I believe every single one was routed through Judge Hellerstein's case. Courtroom, Federal District Court for the Southern District of New York. They all went through there, and most of them took a settlement. They were all trying to given the settlement money, and most of them took it. But I believe there were 96 cases that refused, and they said, "No, we want a trial. We want to find out what happened." Every single one of them, has been butchered, pressured, bullied, badgered, manipulated. In a process overseen by Judge Hellerstein, and he directly was involved in that process in many ways, to force every single one to settle, every single one. Not one has been allowed to come to trial. They don't want a trial. Not only that, they're all forced to sign non-disclosure agreements once they sign the settlement thing, or else there's gag orders. Nobody can talk about anything. That's what's going on. Ellen Mariani is the last one standing. She's the last one, and she's fighting right now. She's been, already gone through the district court. She's gone through the appeals court. She's basically got a Hail Mary pass right now. I mean, there's always other creative ways you can think of, but the most viable thing is this appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. It's called a petition for writ of certiorari. Now, the Supreme Court doesn't have to take it, but it's kind of a loaded case, and there's an awful lot to say in that petition, and it might look pretty bad if they don't take that case. That's why there's, so they've set up the Ellen Mariani Legal Defense Fund. I'm the Secretary Treasurer, and we've got a couple other people on the committee. We've got a website. It's marianilawsuit.com, MarianiLawsuit.com, and we've got briefs on there, the legal briefs and other things. So we're asking for help. We need donations. We need to get $11,000 by November 1st. We already had one deadline, which was September 23rd. It had to be filed by September 23rd, which means he had to start writing the brief by September 11th, and that was actually a very tight deadline. We couldn't get enough money because I had just joined. We only had about 2 weeks, and we were just getting up to speed, and it just wasn't enough time. So he filed for an extension with the U.S. Supreme Court, and they gave it to him. They gave him an additional 2 months. So we've got till November 11th to collect this money. At this point, we have about $1,700, so we've got a ways to go. This is in the interest of all of us for us to get this case to the U.S. Supreme Court. She's fighting her attorney. She's finally got an attorney who's fighting for truth. All the other ones seem to have been compromised, and I'll get into that in just a second.
Who's the attorney?
Oh, his name is Bruce Lichty. L-E-I-C-H-T-Y, Bruce Lichty. And so we're trying to get this appeal going to the U.S. Supreme Court. Some of the stuff that was going on in the case is just, it's outrageous, just outrageous. She found out that she's had a series of attorneys, and they all seem to be bought and paid for and working with the powers that be. This attorney took over, she was originally the administrator of her husband's estate. Her husband who died is Louis Neal Mariani. But she kind of got forced out by various things. And this attorney is supposedly neutral who took over. His name is John Ramsmeyer. One of the things that he did was that, just one of them, was that he was representing United Airlines at the same time and that he was representing Ellen Mariani in this, settling his case against United with them. Total conflict of interest. He's representing both sides. And, of course, he didn't know that. They only found this out later. And there's many other things. There's an attorney that worked for him named Charles Capasse, who never even filed an appearance in the case, and he was given $800,000 out of her, what settlement money would have gone to her, and there was no explanation for it. The only reason why, my understanding is that the strong suspicion is the reason why he was given all that money was that he's the one who helped screw up the case. He's the one who helped screw up Ellen Mariani's case. That case was settled over her strong objections. Ramsmeyer, we had to weigh in, and then they settled the case over her objections. She didn't want to settle. She wanted a trial. Now, meanwhile, we get to Judge Hellerstein. There it gets even worse. Judge Hellerstein, his son, he had a total conflict of interest. His son is Joseph Hellerstein. He worked for an Israeli law firm named Amit Pollack and Matalon. Well, that law firm represented a company. Now, and there's several conflicts of interest. I'm just explaining one of them. You can actually read about more of them in his April 19, 2012 brief, which you can find on our website, mariamhill.com. Anyway, his son, Joseph Hellerstein, worked for this law firm, Amit Pollack and Matalon, and represented a company named BOS, which is Better Online Solutions. Well, on the board of directors of that company was a guy named Bose Harrell. Bose Harrell, his family has a majority ownership stake in a company called ICTS. ICTS is one of the defendants. This is an Israeli company that is one of the defendants. So that's a very close connection. And not only that, that company is the parent company of Huntley USA, which was also a defendant. And that is also the passenger screening company that allegedly led all these hijackers onto the planes. So there's a huge conflict of interest, and there's other conflicts as well. That's just one of the simpler...
Vincent, stop for a second. Where is this Miss Mariani getting these lawyers from? How is she selecting them, even the present one?
Okay, after he answers this question, please hold your questions until after his presentation. Everybody will have a chance to ask questions, okay? Go ahead, please.
Okay. There's a total conflict of interest. Now, when they... I want to be very gentle in how I say this. I don't want to overstate this, although there's a lot more I could say. But the judge is very, very much into the Jewish community. He's got connections with, he's just involved in Jewish organizations. His sister lives in Israel. His son works in Israel. A lot of connections. And then several of the defendants are Israeli companies. So you can see that would also possibly create a conflict of interest. Now, we get up to the appeals court. When Bruce Lichty and Ellen Mariani appealed his decisions, they wouldn't even let Bruce Lichty. It's normally a very simple thing to let an attorney represent the client pro hac vice. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. That means he's not really signed up with New York, but he's out of state, but they let you do that. Well, he wouldn't let him do that. And there was a bunch of other things, of rulings that they were appealing. So they go to the appeals court. It's a complicated web, so I'm just saying a little tiny part of this. Eventually what happened was the appeals court, when they brought in these connections of Judge Hellerstein, this conflict of interest, the appeals court turned vicious at that point. And June 26, 2012 ruling, at the end of it, on page 6, they're using very harsh words, and they said that we're gonna sanction you. You have to answer and explain, it's called an OSC, order to show cause.
you have to explain to us why we shouldn't sanction you, and they threatened to sanction both of them with what could have been a very high, steep penalty. As it turned out, this is in limbo. The disposition of that hasn't been settled, and they may just leave it in limbo like that, which is, by the way, is very similar to what happened to the April Gallup case, but I'll just quickly talk about that just to show that this parallel here and what these courts are doing. April Gallup was in the military. I think she was in the Marines, or she was in the military, and she sued, and she was suing George Bush and all his buddies, and they eventually got to the appeals court. One of the judges on that appellate panel, again, this is a separate case. I'm not talking about the Ellen Mariani's case. But one of the judges on that panel was literally a cousin of George Bush. I mean, talk about a conflict of interest. This case is against George Bush and his buddies, and he wouldn't recuse himself. And when the lawyer pointed it out, they issued sanctions against that lawyer. It's like that's their final defense, is to just abuse their authority and just issue sanctions against these people. So anyway, back to the Ellen Mariani's case. It's really important that this goes to this appeal goes forward. It's important to all of us. There's no guarantees what will happen if they file this petition, but I really want to urge everyone to spread the word on this. And you can read our news release, our August 30th, 2012 news release updated September 17th. You can find it right on the website. Craig McGee, who I believe is on the call here, he wrote a very nice article, and that's right at the top of my website. But I really want to urge people to donate and to help. And I think that's most of my message right there.
Okay. We need to give people time to ask you questions. Thank you for the presentation, Vincent.
Sure.
I'm sure other people than myself have a question they'd like to ask, so I'll put myself in the stack, but others can go first. Who would like to be on the stack to ask a question?
James Jeffrey.
Yeah. Okay, hang on a second. James, Jeffrey, yeah. Robin.
Mike.
Who else?
Mike.
Okay.
Yeah,
Mike.
Don Sterling. I just got on the call.
Don. All right. Don Sterling's on the call, Craig.
Okay.
And then myself. Okay, so James, go ahead.
Okay, I'd just like to ask Vincent if he'd send us send the telecon list a letter just very briefly summing up what this is about and requesting funds and telling people how they could contribute an address or something, and I'll put it out to my website and my list, and others can do the same.
Yes, I can do that. I actually don't even have a website for you guys at this point. I just came on in and I was what website does this get sent to? Or shall I just contact Craig McGee?
Craig McGee, yeah.
Okay, I'll just contact Craig McGee, and yes, I'd be glad to do that. I'll send a short letter with summarizing it, and then with links to our news release and perhaps one or two other things.
Yeah, if there's a PayPal account,
just for reference, you can find that right on the website. There's a donation button right on the main page, and there's also a donation page, and they both take you to the same place. And there's PayPal. There's another company called WePay, and we can also accept checks. And the instructions are all right there.
Does anyone have an objection to this same message being included in our minutes? Okay, hearing no objections, then we will also include it in the minutes. Are you okay, James? Can we move on?
Sure. Maybe he could link the PayPal account to this message. That would make it even easier for people.
Yeah, right. Okay. Jeffrey.
Yeah, Vince, I'm curious as to how Ms. Mariani is finding these lawyers and what sort of due diligence she's doing on the actual lawyers before she retains them to represent her.
I'll be glad to get your question, but something is sticking in my mind. Was I supposed to do something about the PayPal account, or did I misunderstand?
Just give the link to the PayPal account on your message to Craig, okay? That will be
okay, I'll give the link to the page that has the PayPal account on it. That'll work.
That's fine.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, so the question now was, how is she finding all these lawyers? My understanding, and this is a comment, I want to be careful, you know, I'm not supposed to say too much. They're under a gag order. Bruce Lichty and Ellen Mariani, they can't say anything or they get in trouble. So Well, I think they're allowed, they're not allowed to talk to the media. So anyway, I have to be a little bit careful what I say, but it is my understanding that just the entire system was stinking with corruption, and basically the whole system was rigged. And all these lawyers that are surrounding this litigation, 9/11 litigation, when I say all, I can't say categorically that I know all of them, but many of them, especially these larger law firms, they're just corrupt. They're just working with the powers that be. I'm not going to remember the name of the term. The law firm that represented the Mike Davis in his case. He's one another one of these plaintiffs who eventually got sort of forced out. That's one of these large law firms. Unfortunately, I can't remember the exact name of the law firm, but Mary Schiavo is one of the attorneys there, and she was representing Ellen Mariani for a while. But to give a really specific answer to your question, I don't know. I don't know how it came, but my sense is that they're all just hanging around this 9/11 litigation, and they'll find you if you don't find them. That's my sense.
Okay, thank you. Robin, you're next.
Yeah, could you give a very brief thumbnail of what the case was that Ellen lost that is now being appealed, just very simply?
Okay, well, my understanding is there was a wrongful death claim. That's because her husband was killed on 9/11, so that's a lawsuit against the airlines and a variety of other entities like Huntley USA, like ICTS and Huntley USA. I don't remember the entire list of defendants. There were probably a good number of them. So the idea is that she lost her husband and somebody's to blame, and that's filed on behalf of the estate. There was also a loss of society claim, and I'm just using that to kind of summarize it. It's basically, and this is outside of the estate, so legally it's kind of a different case. Loss of society means all the suffering you incur when you lose your husband of various types. He's not supporting you. He's not loving you. You've lost his presence. You've lost his care. All of that. You can sue someone for that. That's a kind of there's damages there. So I think those two prongs are what was there. And then what evolved out of it was all these conflicts of interest
I'm aware of the conflict of interest. The whole thing is a major conflict of interest since before it was planned. What is the base on which Ellen and you are trying to appeal? I got the wrongful death. Okay, good.
Yeah. Well, I don't necessarily know all the basis of what the appeal will be to the U.S. Supreme Court. I believe it will include... It will include, first of all, her right to intervene in the case, her right to get back, and she's nominally locked right out of the case right now. Her motion was a motion to enter the case as an intervener, in other words, to get back in as a party. Once you have a party, you have quite a bit of rights. She's not even a party right now, so she has to get back. So she's appealing the denial of her earlier motion to intervene. She's appealing her denial of her objection to the settlement, which was done
stated objection.
Her objection was denied, and she's appealing that. She wants to reopen the settlement. Then after those more important issues, she would also talk about the conflict of interest of Judge Hellerstein and of John Ramsmeyer, that attorney, and also the denial of the lower court of Judge Hellerstein's denial of her attorney's request to represent Ellen Mariani pro hoc vice. So those are probably the issues that would be in there, but I can't tell you for absolute certainty. Those first two would be in there.
Thank you.
Okay, there are three of us left on the stack, and we've almost run out of time on this issue. In fact, we have run out of time. So I'd like to ask each of you, including myself, to keep your question to 15 seconds or less, and... Vincent, to keep the answer to less than a minute. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay.
This is not a question, it's a statement. And carrying on with the connection to Judge Hellerstein, I'd like to bring to your attention that Bonnie Faulkner of Guns and Butter, who has a program out of Berkeley, KPFA, and also WBAI in New York City on Friday at 9, interviewed Christopher Berlin on September the 5th. It's in the KPFA archive, 1 o'clock on September the 5th. I think it's essential for everybody to hear what they said. And also, I want to bring to your attention that, in case you haven't heard, on September the 9th, the honorary president of the Supreme Court of Italy has stated that he's going to take the 9/11 evidence to the International Criminal Court. And it's not connected with the UN. I took a look at it on the internet, and there's an African woman who's at the head of it, and I'm hoping that they look at the evidence and move forward with it. And thank you for the report on Ellen Mariani.
You're welcome. So that information, Mike, would you give us send us the link for that second story, please?
It's at if you look up Washington's blog, or a simpler thing would be to look up Impossimato.
Okay.
Impossimato. It's Impossimato. Impossimato, and then put in 9/11 International Criminal Court, and Washington's blog posted it on the 9th.
Very good. Thank you. Don, keep it brief, please. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that William Beale was sued, I think, and his case was denied. The same thing in terms of 9/11. My own feeling is that you cannot get justice in a land where there is injustice in any of the court, any level of court. I've tried
it. Thank you.
And, I just want to say one thing. Sandra, are you on the call now, too? Sandra Hicks,
yeah,
on the call?
We'll try to wrap up this section, Don.
Okay, Sandra was at a trial where I was on trial in the local court, and I present the evidence of treason to the judge, and he just threw it out. He wouldn't even talk about it. So this is what happens, even though they're supposed to be accountable.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to ask you, Vincent, what assurance can you give activists for 9/11 Truth that the pursuit here will be not just a settlement, but digging into the realities of 9/11 Truth that have yet to be investigated?
Okay. Well, first of all, I can't give the kind of blanket assurance that you're asking for. However, it is my sense, and it's why I'm involved, is that they are fighting for the truth to come out. She could have accepted a settlement 5 years ago and gotten a substantial portion of the $3.75 million that was allocated for her family, and she has refused to take that. She's living on Social Security. She's not taking this money. It's basically hush money is what it is, because once you get it, you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. She's, and her attorney, you just look at the way the court has just been very hostile to them. That's also an indication of what their intentions are. I can't make the kind of promise that I think you emailed me about this also, or somebody did, that under no circumstances will they settle anything. But it is really my impression that what they're doing is they're fighting for the truth, and their record is evidence of that, and also the kinds of things that they're arguing about, these conflicts of interest. You don't do this if you just get a good settlement. I mean, they're fighting to get into a trial. So that's most that I can say right there. I have also corresponded quite a bit with Bruce Lee. I just want to keep this brief, but I've corresponded with him, and it's my impression that he's really fighting for the truth.
Thank you very much. Okay.
You're welcome.
Vincent, we do want to thank you so much for joining the call and enlightening us about the case and, of course, the need for funds. And we will be publishing whatever you send in terms of summary and appeal on our minutes that will go up to our entire list of invitees, okay?
Great. I'll contact Craig McGee about a little bit more about the details about that. I'll be glad to submit something.
Yep. Okay.
We'll get that.
Okay. All right. Our special second guest tonight is Steve Dayak. Steve has put out a really, I hope it's gone viral, but I don't know, a video that purports to promise an experiment which would demonstrate whether or not a jet engine aircraft wing can in fact penetrate a steel frame building like the one did on 9/11, according to the video evidence. And Steve, you want to just give us a summary and a motivation?
Yeah, I'll give you more than that. whether you want it or not. Yeah, I don't know about the rest of you, but I don't want to be doing this 9/11 truth movement thing forever. I'm tired of endlessly arguing 9/11, and eventually I'd like to solve this caper and get on with my life. I'm also tired of endless war, and I believe the best way to stop the wars is by exposing the lies that started them. So, to kill two birds with one stone, I began the 9/11 Crash Test Project, which you can find at 911crashtest.org. And to help explain it, I also released a YouTube video entitled Tired of War Without End. For those who haven't heard about it, the project proposal is to use one of the many online fundraising sites to raise funds for the project while simultaneously raising awareness about 9/11 in the mainstream. The plan is to take a wing section from a scrapped 767, strap it to a rocket sled, and at 550 miles per hour, slam it into some steel boxes built to the specifications of the exterior columns of the World Trade Center, filming the results with high-speed cameras and producing a video documentary of the project to release online. I won't beat around the bush about this thing, people. This endeavor looks the no planes issue straight in the eye. So, have you ever wondered why after 11 years there's still so much discord and still no consensus within the truth movement? How can so many obviously smart people have so many disparate hypotheses? And why do the big, well-funded truth groups treat the no planes hypothesis with such disdain? I'm sure we've all seen the same evidence, and yet when I examined it, I arrived at the no planes conclusion. That doesn't mean I think no one died, or that it was all CGI, or that I believe in holograms or mythical weapons. What it means is the evidence indicates to me planes couldn't possibly have caused the damage, regardless what we saw on television. Now, I know people can lie, and I know television can be fake, but as far as I'm concerned, there's no way a jet plane can slice through a steel skyscraper like a hot knife through butter, and I believe the 9/11 Crash Test Project can prove it. But I'm not asking for you to embrace my version of 9/11. I'm not asking for any of that about this project. You can read my stuff online, and yeah, I'm pretty controversial on many things, but as far as this is concerned, that's not what the project is about. I'm not asking for anybody to embrace anybody else's version of 9/11. It's about the test and nothing else. Regardless what any of us believe or think the results will be or will imply. Whether or not the crash test ever even occurs, the project has already been a success by reaching people who otherwise would never have considered 9/11 to be anything other than the official story. So you're talking about a legal case where, you know, you're frustrated about getting any ground with them. I've given up on the officials completely. I'm going for the people. I'm going for family and friends. I don't know what else to do. So by simply asking the question, what would happen if we crashed a jet wing into some steel boxes, it generates introspection. I was able to reach even the most staunch, Fox-watching, gun-toting conservative skeptic by simply explaining the crash test project and then showing him the Mythbusters Myth Revolution video. For 10 years, this friend of mine would laugh at me as I went through my phases of 9/11 enlightenment. But when I showed him the crash test project, he became very quiet. After three times watching the Mythbusters cut the car in half, he finally said, "Oh, that wing would just explode against the steel." 3 days later, he called to ask how I deal with being lied to like that. And I said, "You see how I deal with it." And we both laughed. Right there is one example of a brief skirmish with the mainstream. And my friend is now fully on board with the project and has offered his expertise with steel fabrication to boot. The point is, the no planes conclusion is not so crazy. In fact, for the media-driven lifestyle of today, it seems to me to be one of the simplest concepts for the mainstream to grasp, although the implications are staggering and can be too much for many people to deal with. Face it, for the no-planes conclusion to be correct, the media, academia, military, and government had to be involved, meaning our leaders have been feeding us a colossal lie. But you know what they say, if you make the lie big enough and repeat it often enough, people will believe it. That's the nature of the big lie. Unfortunately, most of us still trust people in positions of authority. We believe they would never do such a thing, a conviction I notice is easy to exploit by propagandists. We tend to believe authority by virtue of their authority. Apparently, power only corrupts elsewhere. I assume it is for this reason the 9/11 crash test project has been given the cold shoulder by most of the truth movement establishment, because it stands the best chance of proving the no planes hypothesis, which, let's be honest, would be the death knell for that part of the truth movement that is focused on planes and nothing but. So with that in mind, please listen to some of the responses I have received from one of the more well-known truth groups, and I quote, "Believe your eyes, plane wings can and did slice the Twin Towers' exterior columns. There's no value to any tests like this." End quote. Here's another quote. "Here's the problem. We don't feel there is any need to resolve the issues between us and the no-planers. You'll never get cooperation from us on this. The no-planers make it easy for the mainstream to ignore us." And a final quote. "I agree that there's no sense in trying to reach the no-planers. They are either too stupid to be concerned with or are actually disinformation agents. The no-plane situation was obviously planned in advance of the attacks and was designed to work in concert with there actually being no plane crashes at the Pentagon or in Shanksville." So most of the people I've met from the big truth movement groups share these sentiments. But the thing is, I know I'm not a disinformation agent, and I'm pretty sure I'm not stupid, but I doubt the big truth movement groups aren't already part of the mainstream that they claim to be trying to reach. If the no-planes conclusion is correct, then it would make sense that the propaganda arm of the military would be working overtime to discredit it, which to me makes suspect the groups that refuse to consider it. So here we are, back at square one with the infighting and finger-pointing of a seemingly dysfunctional truth movement busily undermining itself while the years pass by. To break this cycle and to force the issue both in the mainstream and within the truth movement, I bring you the 9/11 crash test project. If the movement really cares about the truth, it would consider changing tactics after spending 11 years petitioning the most likely suspects for an investigation. If the movement is correct about the no-planers and they sincerely want a unified front without the fringe element, they can use the crash test as a way to get rid of the no-planes contingent that prevents them from being taken seriously. If the wing slices the steel, the no-planers are done. If the wing is shattered by the steel, someone has some explaining to do. But either way, the truth will be known, making an obvious victory for a truth movement. It's a win-win for everyone, except the perpetrators. The strength of this project is in its asking for a citizens' investigation, one that would use the scientific method to prove or disprove a hypothesis. Yes, based on Newtonian physics, I state it is impossible for the wing to cut the steel, but I could be wrong, which would only vindicate the government as well as the anti-no-planes truth movement. The movement would be able to demonstrate solidarity and a commitment to the truth, not to mention the ability to apply the scientific method to solve problems, which incidentally is a standard to which every 9/11 hypothesis should be held. So at the very least, this project should end contention within the truth movement by settling the no-planes argument once and for all, something which can only benefit the cause of truth, whichever way the rocket sled slices. So why are the big truth groups so reluctant to endorse it? I think it's because they know what the results will be, making this a test of metal as well as a test of metals. It was Abraham Lincoln who said that a house divided cannot stand, and I believe that for the 9/11 truth movement to make any progress over the next 11 years, we need to sort out our differences and work together. If we are dedicated to reaching the truth, wherever it may be, this project is a rocket-powered shortcut to getting there, and I could sure use your help in making it happen. So please join me at 911crashtest.org, and thank you all for your time, and big thanks to Ken Freeland for the invitation to speak.
You're welcome, Steve, but I should tell you that you were invited at the request of the group. I was only the go-between, okay? There was a lot of interest in the group
to
have you speak, and we appreciate your coming. With that said, who besides me would like to ask Steve a question?
I would, Don.
Mike?
Robin?
Don Mastillion.
Okay,
hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm waiting.
Did you hear me?
Kind of nervous, but I'm here.
Yeah. Ken, did you hear that no one would be on the set?
Okay. I got Don, and who else?
Robin.
Just to hear the same kind, say it again.
Robin?
Robin?
Craig?
Walsh?
Craig?
I'm sorry, who? Craig, okay. Walsh?
Mike?
Mike? Walsh? I got Mike. Walsh? Okay, I put myself. I'm sorry, Sander, I got you, okay. And, okay. Got Robin, you first.
Oh, thank you, yeah. I appreciate you being here, and this is great, and I'm supportive of any test, anywhere, anytime, about anything. I only want to ask two questions. One question. I have a concern, this is a statement, I have a concern about the competency of the test, meaning, you know, you've talked about an airplane wing or a section or whatever it might be. I see the only test that can be viable in this situation is to have each of the structures competing against themselves as they exist as structures, the World Trade Center buildings and the intact aircraft. I think that taking parts of the building and parts of the aircraft are going to give false information because the surrounding parts of the building and the surrounding parts of the aircraft will contribute energies and forces in their own, you know, the function of their own design to end up with the net result or the end result. So I have big concerns about taking part of a wing, part of a building, and just matching the only constant or the only consistency between the two would be velocity. I don't think that's a competent test. So, A, my question is, how do you want to handle that? Because there's fuselage, wing connections, engines, stronger interior wing sections, weaker exterior wing sections, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then, that's one. And then the second question is, we're all trying to dispute and bring out evidence that the official story is incorrect, which you have agreed with us is not correct. Would not it be far easier by 10 to 100 fold to create a test where a 757 wing at X miles per hour impacts light poles at the specific heights and locations of the light poles to see if those could be, to see what the net result of that would be, since the light poles themselves are such disputed evidence in the Pentagon scenario. I know that I just can't get past the light poles myself. But that seems to me it would be a much simpler test because you would very easily have a smaller part of a wing connecting or impacting a very easily duplicatable light pole. That's it. Thank you. I appreciate your work. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I've never been to one of these conferences before, so yeah, it's all news to me. First, your first question was as far as the competency of the test and, you know, the connections regarding an aircraft and how the different strengths are going to be interacting with the building's different strengths. Yeah, ideally, I'd build a whole new tower and fly a whole jet into it, but we have to keep it real and keep it. I have no budget, so I'm trying to do this with, at the same time, for the one, let me just stop sputtering and try to spit it out here. Honestly, I really would be surprised if they allow this test at all. I think that the response I've received from the test centers, which has been nothing, which has been a cold shoulder, has been completely ignored, tells me that they will push back on this any way possible. So the test is kind of a stunt. Right? I mean, it's designed to reach the mainstream, to make people think, if we're allowed to do the test, I will fall over with amazement. But I would sure love to try, and it doesn't mean I won't try. So the point is that Yeah, I would love to use, originally I thought of two full plane wings strapped to a rocket sled, and then I started thinking about all the engineering that's going to go into it, the amount of money it would take, and I just decided that it's just too much work and too much effort to use anything but the strongest part of the jet wing, that which is between the fuselage and the engine. I essentially just wanted to demonstrate, look, this is the strongest part of the wing, and if it can't cut just the steel tower, the steel columns, we're not talking about a concrete floor behind it or anything, just a few of the columns with a spandrel in there. If it can't do that, then none of this plane's going to do that. At least it gives the impression, it'll at least get the imagination flowing by people who have never been exposed to this sort of information.
Okay, and the question about the Pentagon is an alternative?
Yeah, again, I think it comes down to money. I've priced out full scrapped jets. You can get a whole 747 without engines and all the electronics, just the shell, for $30,000. That's not too bad, you know. You get the full fuselage and two wings, the full airplane. But then you got to do something with it and get it out of there. So it again becomes, how much money do you want to spend on this? And again, it has to be demonstration value. We're trying to reach the people who are oblivious to all of that. This is even an issue now. This has been 11 years. People aren't even paying attention. So I don't know. It was designed as a way to attract attention. I mean, I like big explosions, and this is a great attention-getting device. And so far it's been successful in making people think. So that's why I've kind of thinking small on this because, yeah, I think that it's that since everybody saw the impacts of Flight 175 hitting the South Tower, that would be a great demonstration to show this is impossible, or it is possible, and then the no-planers go away. Really, I'm willing to retire over this thing. I don't want to do this forever. I actually want to solve it. And
okay.
So I think this is one
Thank
way
you.
To do that.
All right, Don, is there Leanne?
Yes, Steve, are you aware of Building 7, that collapsed at 5:20 p.m.?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Are you also aware that you can go on YouTube and put in Barry Jennings, who was the former director of, I guess it was emergency management for the city of New York, who had, quote, an untimely death at age 53, and Michael Hess, put that in on YouTube, and Michael Hess is the head corporate attorney for the city of New York. He heads up the entire New York City Law Department. He's still alive. Both gentlemen were in Building 7 at approximately between 9:15 and 9 a.m., and what they said was they had went into the building in the lobby. It was many police were there. They took the elevator to the 23rd floor to their office. And when they went in, the coffee was still steaming, half-eaten sandwiches.
Well, excuse me, Don, what does this have to do with
this? What does this have to do with the plane crash?
Ken, may I please be able to finish something?
No, you can't if you're off the subject, you cannot.
All right, I'll cut it short. I'll make it simple, okay. All right, now please let me finish without an interruption this time.
If you're on the subject.
I'm on the subject.
No, you're not. Come on.
The subject is Building 7 was not struck by an airplane. Therefore, you don't have to demonstrate.
All right, I'm going
to
call you out of order, Don. You're off the subject again, and we don't have time for this.
Excuse me. You have plenty of time, Craig, you're the previous person. You're pulling the same stunt on me.
You are.
Every
yeah,
time.
Whatever.
Why do you like to
please,
shut
yeah.
me up on a call?
Please follow the order, Don. You've been called out of order. Craig, you're next.
Okay. I have two quick ones. Up. Two quick questions, Steve. First, you mentioned that you don't believe in holograms or CGI, but it sort of left me curious as to what you actually do believe happened. My second question is, if I'll get the second one, and then if you don't remember it by the time we get to it, then I'll remind you. The second one, I guess I was concerned with the possibility of what would happen if, let's say the test is done and it actually does cut the steel, Yes, that would eliminate the no-planers, but wouldn't there be a danger that the mainstream media might see this and sort of jump on it and say, aha, this proves that the 9/11 truthers are out to lunch? Like, isn't there a danger of it kind of biting us back in that respect?
All right, I'll answer the first question first. I don't believe it all. It was all CGI. As far as my beliefs on how it happened, can we just stick to the crash test? Because I think that we can end up getting into a big tangent on everyone fighting about what they think actually happened. I'd like to just focus on the crash test. I'll just boil it right down to missiles. I think it was missiles.
That's right to the point. Okay, Mike, you're next.
Wait a minute. There was a second question there.
I beg your pardon. Yeah. Sorry.
Can you repeat that, please? I'm sorry. Just briefly. You were talking about whether we would lose our credibility
if the test were to take place and the wing exploded and didn't cut the steel, then that would, as you say, that would be extremely provocative. That would really change a lot. But if the wing did cut the steel, then people outside the movement might then use that as a way of dismissing the movement altogether, as opposed to the internal struggle.
Sure, fair enough. But let's be real. Don't they already dismiss the movement anyway?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's the truth, it's the truth. It is what it is. We shouldn't deny it no matter what.
Sure. Okay.
Jeffrey in the stack.
Okay. Mike is next. Jeffrey on the stack. Mike is next.
I would like to make a couple observations. I think, as you pointed out, sort of in a cursory way, that trying to do this test would be nearly impossible in terms of raising the money to do it. I really think we worked too hard. If everybody got behind this kind of a thing and tried to duplicate it, I mean, there's no way we could duplicate the towers and a real plane flying at the speeds they say the plane flew or planes flew. I think we have it's much easier to prove our case in other ways rather than what you're proposing. You say you want to solve the case. Well, does it really make any difference whether planes hit the buildings or they didn't hit the building? Certainly that could be examined if a real investigation were to be convened. But for us to take that upon ourselves now, I think it sends us down a path that is wrought with problems and monetary expenses we can't afford. I think you're making things much more difficult than they need to be, because we have overwhelming evidence already. We know that the official story can't be true for a long list of reasons why we got it. So to pursue what you're suggesting, I think just is going to be frustrating for everybody, and we don't need to do it.
Well, the thing is that I'm not asking you to do anything. The funding is going to be handled. The funding is going to be handled through one of the fundraising sites. I'm not asking anyone for any money. I'm only asking for you to not diss it, really. That's all I'm asking for. I intend to go directly to the people, not to the truth movement. The whole idea was to try to get other people to talk about it in the mainstream. And if
let me respond to what you're saying. And I think you're off a little bit there, because you said that this is not on the radar. Well, just a week ago, Jesse Ventura was on the Piers Morgan show at 9 o'clock on CNN. And he had the whole room behind him for what he was saying. And he brought up Building 7. And Piers Morgan didn't know that the BBC had reported that Building 7 was down 20 minutes before it came down. And Jesse looked at him, he said, "This is fact." And Piers Morgan said, "You need to take a break." Jesse Ventura was right on it. I can see what you're trying to do, but I really think you're spinning your wheels and it's not going to advance us anywhere. And we have a much easier case just by looking at 7. And nobody can deny that 7 wasn't hit by a plane. Nobody can deny the speed that it came down. And if we focus on 7, it makes everything much easier. And then the courts and everybody else can take on whether or not planes hit the buildings or how the towers came down.
Okay.
But
okay, I think. Thank you. I think you made your point.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's see. I'd like to say myself that in terms of what Robin was saying, and I think Robin probably speaks for a pretty large segment of people with a background in aviation and physics, I think it's vital, if this project is to proceed, that it have on its board or whatever the administration of it is, people who would be critical, people who actually would be the naysayers if the project wasn't done in the right way and would deny the results having meaning. In other words, I think it should be go out of its way to have people from both sides of the no planes question, so that the critics are right there as part of it, and the double advantage of that would be that it would not seem as if it was the truth movement itself that was on trial, but rather that it was an internal question that was being resolved experimentally. The reason that I support this project personally is that it does represent an attempt to make a scientific experiment of which there's a dearth in the 9/11 truth movement, and I don't understand why. So I think just on those grounds alone, it should be pursued, but only if it has what we would call bipartisan support.
Absolutely, and okay. I can't agree more. I that's what I'm asking for, is as many people to hold my feet to the fire as possible. And again, I'd like to get so many people involved in this that it doesn't rely on one person to complete it. I mean, I work two jobs and I try to have a family life. I'm not sure I can do this without a lot of help. And so,
I'd like to also suggest that at the earliest opportunity, you open up a forum somewhere that anybody who wants to, you know, throw in ideas can be a part of, to get a discussion going that would, you know, collectively become eventually implemented in the course of the experiment. So that people can feed in ideas like Robin's, you know, critical ideas, as well as people who don't even agree with the project and people who support it wholeheartedly and have ideas on how it should be implemented. That was my suggestion.
Sure.
Sandra, you're next.
Go ahead.
Sandra, you're next.
Okay, thank you. I want to say that I welcome a diversity of opinion in the movement, and I know that after my 55-city book tour this summer, I ran into no plane people often, but it is a minority view inside the still pretty vibrant 9/11 truth movement nationally, and that's fine. I mean, we need to appreciate diversity and not make minority views feel like they're being smothered just because they are minority views. And so strategically, my brother, I would just suggest to you to try to maybe strategically think about toning down some of your animosity, because I heard a lot of you referring to these well-funded 9/11 truth groups as if they're institutions, and I just kind of like don't see any 9/11 truth groups in this country being well-funded or institutionalized. I really think we have to figure out ways to work together, unite around where we can unite, and build each other up. And so I want to say that the 9/11 crash site idea sounded really attractive at first, and that the criticisms you're getting from your brothers in the movement is are also very valid. And so I just wanted to throw that out to you. So I guess I wanted to say, who are the well-funded 9/11 truth groups?
Well, anyone other than me, I'll tell you that. I trust me, I get it all the time. I mean, everyone gets excited when they talk about, at least I know that I get excited when I talk about this. It's hard not to, but you know, if you sense the animosity for me, I did read a few quotes there that were pretty inflammatory about the project itself. And so, you know, if I sound defensive, I think I have good reason for it.
This is James. Could I still get on the staff?
Okay, James, you haven't spoken yet. Jeff, you're next.
Yeah. My question to you, Steve, I have nothing against testing and simulations and modeling and so forth. Have you explored all the mathematical models and engineering models? Because if you're an engineer or have any experience in engineering, you'll know that a lot of the engineering projects, every engineering project that's designed, is actually based on empirical testing to begin with. In other words, they know how materials behave under different conditions. And so what's the problem with mathematically modeling the interaction of a plane wing and engines and jet fuel and steel columns and so on and so forth? That's my question.
Yeah, and I think that the math is already there that proves that it's not possible. But again,
Hold on. Where is the math there? Is that part of your website?
No, I try not to go there because I am certainly not a physicist or an authority on such things. What I was trying to say is that there are plenty of arguments going on both sides that say it is possible and those that say it is not. For example, MIT's paper on how they, you know, rolled all the aluminum of the wings into a big machete and then calculated how they could have possibly sliced through the steel. The math doesn't do it. And again, if I'm trying to reach people, especially people who are weaned on television, it's not going to get their attention. So that's, again, it's more than just a test to prove something. It's a test to get attention.
Okay. Thank you. James, you're next.
Okay. Okay, a couple things. First of all, I think that Jeff's idea about you getting the mathematical modeling, if you could get a physicist to do that and put it fairly simply on your website, it probably could help your case if it shows that it's impossible. I mean, that's sort of counterintuitive for most people, so I think that would really help your case up front. And the second sure. thing is, I really like what you said about getting the attention of people outside the movement. I can see NFL fans and NASCAR fans and stuff that like a crash tuning into this.
Yeah, it's an exciting concept. That's what I think. It's at least something that's interesting. Yeah, we can prove it up one side and down the other with math, but we're going to put people to sleep with that.
Yeah, I agree, and probably you'd find segments of the media that couldn't leave it alone. I mean, they might want to comply and say we're staying away from 9/11 truth. But on the other hand, this is something too exciting, and they're going to have to carry it and sponsor it.
Yeah. So I do think that this could possibly make inroads, whichever way the rocket sled slices.
I do too. I think we could get attention this way.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see, we're now at part C. Steve, it sounds like there's quite a diversity of responses here. Do you want to request that the call endorse your project in some way?
Oh, actually, my whole speaking has been that. This has been me begging the whole time. We don't need any more time for any more of it. So.
Okay, great. Well, I certainly appreciate it, Steve. I think you've definitely had a challenge here more than I was anticipating, but you've done a great job of letting people know what you're doing and why you're doing it. And if people want more information, can you send to Craig just the link to your website and any summary of your project that you'd like in the minutes?
Sure. Did I get his email address? Or?
I'll give that to you, Steve.
Okay.
It's Craig, C-R-A-I-G. McKee, M-C-K-E-E.
Okay.
45.
All right.
At yahoo.ca.
All right. I will do so.
Great.
Thank you all
for
having me.
Thank you again, Steve.
I appreciate the time. Good luck to everyone, and thanks again.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Steve. Okay. That brings us to item 6, which are the proposals from Don Mazzarellian that were postponed from the 29 August teleconference. When we postponed it, we were in the process of dealing with a point of order by Dwayne. Dwayne, are you still on the call?
I'm on, but I can hardly understand anything.
Oh, boy. Let's try this again. Dwayne, can I go ahead and read your point of order, and you can tell us if it's correct?
Yeah.
The motion asks for the 9/11 leaders telecon to make a judgment as to which 9/11 truth facts are correct. I'm asking if that is going beyond, I'm sorry, before I say this, I should read Part A first so people know what we're talking about. The motion in question by Don Mazzarelli, and I propose that the teleconference accept the 13 9/11 consensus points agreed upon by a consensus 9/11 and listed by the 9/11 best evidence panel as a basis for pursuing 9/11 justice, and those 13 points are enumerated. Okay, so going back to that, Ken,
there was an adjustment made to that. It was
no, there wasn't. That is the adjustment. The adjustment was a basis, and that's how I read it.
Well, a basis.
Was there any other?
Right.
Was there any other adjustment? Okay.
No, that's it.
The motion asks. This is the point of order now that we're considering, or that we need to resolve. Dwayne says the motion asks for the 9/11 truth, the 9/11 telecon to make a judgment as to which 9/11 truth facts are correct. I'm asking if that is going beyond coordination of 9/11 truth group activities, which I see as the primary thrust of our mission or charter. If we are expanding our mission or charter, my point of order is asking if it requires a supermajority of some sort. Now, in the intervening month, I've had the opportunity to ask some experts on Robert's Rules about this question, and the answer is very similar to what Dwayne has raised, but it's not quite the same. It's not that it takes a two-thirds majority to pass such a motion, it's that it takes a two-thirds majority to introduce such a motion. Because it takes us beyond our stated mission, it requires a two-thirds majority to even be considered. So,
I'm going to make it simple for you, Ken.
Excuse me. I wasn't finished speaking. So, in fairness, what I propose we do is take this vote that should have been taken in the first place about whether we wish to consider this proposal, which has been seconded. It's been seconded, so it won't need a second, but it will need a two-thirds majority to be considered because it does take us beyond our currently stated mission.
I want to withdraw those 3 points and substitute two other things and not vote. Okay, that's what I wanted to say. So you don't have to even talk about what A, B, or C. And can I
accept
what I want to substitute? I want to substitute something else. I said I want to get something else out, and because I don't want to go through all this again. So I've got something simpler that I'm going to propose, okay? This is what I want to propose. I propose the following two survey statements. This is not voting. This is a survey statement to be answered by the entire group, 9/11 group, all approximately 150 people. One, controlled demolitions, not fires, caused the collapse of the Twin Towers and WTC-7 in their own footprint. Yes or no? It's a survey. That's point one. Point two is this group should pursue 9/11 justice. Yes or no? This is what I want to substitute for those 3 points so that I don't waste your time on those 3 points, okay? A, B, and C are out. This is what I'd like to go so that when you write your minutes up, that it'll be showing that this is a survey.
I couldn't hear the end of the second point. It's all garbled.
Before we go there, I mean, you know, you're basically asking to change the agenda, Don.
I said I'm withdrawing. I have the right to withdraw.
You do have the right to withdraw it because it's being reconsidered.
I'm substituting this for it.
The substitution is what you do not have an automatic right to do, and that's what we're talking about right now. You can propose a change in the agenda to allow your points to be considered.
I want to withdraw those three things now, so you don't waste your time. That's fine. I have a right to withdraw my own motion.
Yes, you do, Don. The three points are withdrawn at your request. Okay.
All right. I want to be able to talk about these two points now in place of it.
In order to do that, we will need to take a vote on changing the agenda, which is absolutely necessary.
Take a vote on changing the agenda. Go ahead.
Okay. This requires a two-thirds vote because it's a change in the agreed agenda. Don Mazzarelli would like to propose two substitute motions for the motions he's withdrawn. It will take a two-thirds vote to allow him to make the substitution right now. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
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 Okay, that's definitely not a two-thirds affirmative, so the motion is fails, and the new proposals will need to go on next month's agenda.
I'll put them
okay.
on next month's agenda then.
Okay, you can send them a request, and we'll take
them. I requested them ahead of time beforehand. I asked that they be put on the agenda. I said that before.
Well, there's a way of. Why don't you make that proposal now that they be put on next month's agenda, and we'll
see
whether the
proposal now that these two questions, and they were, by the way, the listserv group was given these same two questions. There were 18 people on the listserv. Out of the 18, 5 answered them, and everyone was affirmative on the point 2, which was this group should pursue 9/11 justice.
John, just read your points, please, so people can know what we'll be voting on.
Okay. You're voting on a survey. This is only a survey of the entire membership, and this goes out to the entire membership to be surveyed. And the point 1 is controlled demolitions, not fires, caused the collapse of the Twin Towers and WTC-7 in their own footprint. Yes, blank, no. People would just check it off. Point 2 is this group should pursue 9/11 justice. Yes, blank, no. That's it.
Okay. And the motion is to put that on next month's agenda.
The motion is that I'd like to have this in the minutes of the meeting to be sent to all of the members and asking them to complete the survey.
No, that's putting it on this month's agenda, then. You're bringing it up for this month's agenda. Yeah, I'm sorry, Don. It's already been voted that you cannot treat these questions this month. You are now given the opportunity to request them to be put on next month's agenda. Okay, that's what we're voting on.
Next month's agenda, okay?
All in favor of putting those items on next month's agenda for Don, say aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the ayes have it, so it will be on next month's agenda.
All right, so you know what it is now, right?
Craig, did you get him?
Yeah, we voted to... I'm not clear on why we have to vote to put something on next month's agenda, but...
Well, because next month's agenda hasn't been made out yet, so he wants it to be there before we even get to the agenda formation.
But in the minutes of the meeting, it'll be covered that we spoke about it, and you can
It will be mentioned that it will be on next month's agenda. That's what he wanted. He wants it in the minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So now we're moving on to. I think we're near the close here. Announcements. Does anyone have an announcement?
Yes. That was in my local town. I presented the evidence. Hello.
Did we miss an agenda item there, Ken?
Oh. I beg your pardon. I think we did. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. We do have one more agenda item. It is the proposed letter to Elizabeth Woodward and David asking that the consensus panel publish its page of definitions on its website. And the text of the message of the proposed letter was sent in the draft agenda, which everyone has had a chance to see. Does anybody wish to comment on this question? I'm sorry, Craig. It's your request, and you get to go first and motivate it. Go ahead.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know if anyone's having as much trouble as I am hearing. I can hardly hear anybody anymore. But anyway, I'll muddle through here.
I am. Robin, I am. This is.
Other people having the same trouble?
Yeah. It's terrible. I wouldn't want to approve or disapprove anything.
Well, you know, I mean, if it has to be put off, I wouldn't, I guess, be... The purpose of the letter, I mean, I could read the whole thing, but I think if we all have the agenda, the gist of it is that, first of all, I wanted to follow up on the letter that we sent in the summer, so this part I don't
feel needs a vote, because basically it's just following up to say, you know, so do you have a decision? Have you made a decision on what we asked before? Because the answer that I got from Elizabeth Woodworth was that they were both out of town and they couldn't deal with it then, but that they would address the subject of language. And just for everybody, just to summarize it, we wrote a letter to the consensus panel asking them not to use the word attacks in all of their material, because on the grounds that it reinforces the official story, and that another term, a more neutral term, would be preferable. So they said that they would address that, and they also said that they would put a page of definitions up on their site, so they would explain to the public what they mean by attacks. So my letter is got, on one hand, I'm following up just to find out if they have made any decisions, but there are two points I'm adding to it. One is that the press release that they issued in the summer for that set of new consensus points, in one of the paragraphs, which is in the letter, I quote in the letter, they refer to when the Pentagon was struck at 9:37. And this is taking as fact that the Pentagon was struck by something. And I think obviously we don't agree that that's the case. And I think most in the Truth Movement, including David Ray Griffin himself, don't believe that a large plane hit the Pentagon. So that was a concern. But they've also done it again in their latest press release from September, where they make a reference to Flight 11, which hit the North Tower, is the exact quote. Flight 11, which hit the North Tower. Now, a lot of people don't agree with that. Even if you believe that a plane hit, the majority, I think, of the Truth Movement believes that a plane hit, or some sort of aircraft, but we don't agree that it was Flight 11, necessarily. A lot of people don't feel it was Flight 11. So this is just basically asking the consensus panel to, because they're sending these press releases out to hundreds and hundreds of you know, major media sites, the Boston Globe and the Wall Street Journal, and you know, these are statements that reinforce the official story, and I don't feel they should be doing that. They should be, you know, they don't have to take a position on it. They just don't have to reinforce what the official story says. So the letter basically asks them, you know, to consider that. And that's, so I would just, we had a unanimous support to send the original letter asking about attacks, and so I guess I would like the support of the teleconference to send this follow-up.
Okay, would anybody else like to comment on this proposal?
Robin on the stack.
Robin stack.
Paul?
If you can hear me, I'm getting garbled messages. You know, I'm hearing some of you guys some of the time perfectly and some of the time very not well at all. The only problem I have, Craig, is the first paragraph, which is, I think it's a little bit over an overplay of it. The last set of points, which was only three, and frankly, I don't think they were particularly significant. I mean, I know you're trying to ingratiate us to them, but that's just my reaction.
Is this Robin speaking?
That was Paul.
That was Paul, okay. Robin, if I could request going ahead of you, because I do have an amendment to offer that might alleviate Paul's concern.
I'm sorry, Ken, I didn't hear.
I was requesting if I could go ahead of you, because I have amendment to offer regarding the first paragraph that I believe will be a friendly amendment.
I think that my point is probably more significant.
Okay, go ahead, then. Go ahead.
We are dealing with sophisticated communications, and for some reason our electronic connection does not meet the standards of the people on this conference call. I am not comfortable at being able to have a good conversation with anybody, and would want to give everybody more respect than our electronic communications provides tonight. I think we have to push this off.
Okay.
It's been moved. Is there a second to that request?
That wasn't a motion. That was a statement of opinion.
Well, I know, but I'm sure
it's a motion. It's a motion that we postpone until next month.
Yeah, it's a motion to postpone. Would anybody like to second the motion to postpone? It's been moved and seconded to postpone consideration of this question due to the bad audio quality. Is there any discussion? I could hear him well enough. I heard Craig well enough. This has been Craig Gillespie. Would anybody else like to comment on the question of postponement?
Well, I'll say something, Craig. I can tell just by the trouble I'm having right now. I'm having a hard time hearing almost anything, and I'm sure some people are probably hearing well, and other people aren't. So. I would not want people to feel that they couldn't say what they had to say or understand what we were voting on. So if someone wants to move, or I'll move then, that we put this off.
It's already moved and seconded, so it's just a question.
I'll say that I'm in favor of that if that's what the group wants to do.
Thank you, Craig. Would anybody else, does anybody object to postponing this question until next month due to bad audio quality? Hearing no objections, then this will be on the top of next month's agenda.
Thank you all.
All right, Dwayne, we're not done. We have announcements. Does anyone besides me have an announcement to make?
Yes. Yeah, not necessarily what I was saying before.
Don, go ahead.
I'd like to give a website, if people want to jot it down, www.thesovnews.com, and you'll see the front page article of the September issue, which will be up there until October 1st. But up the upper left-hand corner, there's a link to what I call a trilogy of truth in memory of the 9/11 victims. I'm asking that people click on that and read it. And then you can send me emails. My email address or phone number is there. The second point announcement I want to make is that I went to my local meeting and I presented them the evidence that I talked about previously of Barry Jennings and Michael Hess, where their testimony on 9/11 both verified that explosions occurred in the basement in Tower 7, and in addition, there were dead bodies in the darkened lobby as they went out. The government had stated there were no deaths.
No, Don, that's not an announcement. That's reading something. We don't need that right now.
I'm giving you something that I did.
No. You can wear it, but you can't read it. You can't take time now to read it. Sorry.
No, reading it. Okay. I'm talking. So do I have a right to talk or no? You want to stop me?
No, you have a right to make an announcement, but you're not doing that right now, so you're out of order. I have an announcement about Michael Figa, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. He is the one who has a dust mass study proposal. Yeah. That is to take dust that was found in the masks of the first responders and still exists, and do a study on it, a follow-up study to see what shows up. He has found a source for the dust, and therefore is encouraging people who have an interest, or particularly people who have background in related fields, to get into contact with him to help formulate the study and to implement it. So I will be getting his contact information on the minutes, but I just want to make people aware that he has found a source for the dust and he will be pursuing that study. Okay. Anybody else have an announcement?
Robin?
Robin?
Hello?
Go ahead, Robin.
Okay. This is just a message for Craig. Craig, I've been doing some reading some of your stuff, and there are three names I want to give you that dig into the Frank Legg and John Bursell thing. The key player in that whole group of people is a guy named Miles Cara, who was with Team 8, and he's a mouthpiece for the 9/11 Commission. He is connected to a guy named Warren Stutt, who is connected to Frank Legg, And then there's a John Farmer, not the same as the, I think he's not the same as the guy on the commission himself, who's done some work with radar. Bottom line of the story is there's a direct pipeline to establishing and sustaining the 9/11 Commission's report regarding radar, NORAD stuff, and it is all handled through Miles Cara, with the mouthpieces being Warren Stutt, Frank Legg, and eventually John Bursell jumped on, and then John Farmer. And unfortunately, a guy wrote a book called 9/11 Mystery Plane, I think that's what it's called, Gaffney, okay,
yeah.
It's just like part of that crap, and it's just, it's not right. So I just wanted to give you that tip.
Does anyone else have an announcement?
Yeah. Thank you.
Who else? Does anyone else have an announcement? Okay, hearing none, then we're going to adjourn, and the next call will be the last Wednesday of October at the same time in the same place, and hopefully with better audio. We have never had a problem like this before, so I don't know what the deal is. And that will be the 31st of October, Halloween. So we'll see y'all on Halloween if
you
can make it.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye.
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 Bye-bye. Popular again? Yeah, Don Mersalian.